Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Welcome, audience. This is Divya Parekh, your host. Today, I am very excited because I have a millennial entrepreneur and an engineer. So Camp Dunbar is an NC State mechanical engineer with a passion for small business and entrepreneurship. He's currently focused on growing his company, whose the name of his company is Sluice Hammocks. And this hammock, I can swear by it because I'm going to share the story with you later on as we roll into the show, is you can have the comfort and the versatility of camping style hammocks with the new colorful in our U.S. American colors. He also works as a biotech engineer contractor through Fourth Wind, which he founded in 2012. Not only all this, he is an experienced CAD designer and can learn to operate any machine efficiently. And he says that creativity, confidence, and personal relationships are keys to success. Camp's hammocks have been recently featured in News and Observer, a Triangle newspaper. So welcome, Camp. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hello, Divya. Thanks for having me. Very excited to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Oh, I'm sure our listeners, especially our young millennials and young adults who are aspiring to be scientific professional and also have thoughts about becoming entrepreneurs, are going to enjoy listening to the show and learn so much from it. So, fellow audience, I'm your host, Divya. I am international leadership wellness coach, speaker, and author of a successful book, which is The Voyage to Your Vision. It's an international best-selling book on Amazon. I had the pleasure of co-authoring it with other esteemed professional coaches, and I help professionals, coaches, youth, and executives to step into levels beyond confidence and stay in the dialogue. It's just not about who you are. It's showing up as your best every single day and moving beyond confidence. Every one of us has confidence, yet it's about reaching that next level and staying in it. So, Camp, without further ado, let's go ahead and get started. Can
Sure.
you tell me your story as to when you were a student in high school? We are going to look at different phases of your life and see how
Okay.
you progress, because especially our younger generation is going to be really looking into different things that, you know, when you have passed through different phases of life, how did you decide? So when you were in high school, what kind of courses did you take? Did you know you wanted to become an engineer at that time?
Sure. So in high school, I didn't really know. The only thing I knew was that I liked to create things, work with my hands. My father is a mechanical engineer, so from a very young age, we were, you know, repairing the lawnmowers, working on the cars, tinkering in the basement, stuff like that. So I guess in high school, that background at home led me into taking math and science classes. Always had an interest in the electives all the way back to middle school. I went to middle school at Ligon Middle School in Raleigh, and one of my favorite courses was called Exploring Technology with Mr. Koop. And if we have any local listeners, they will surely recognize Mr. Koop's famous class, which I took as an elective probably every semester for 2 years, because it let us work in the wood shop and build things with our hands. There was all sorts of competitions where we had to make our own designs and fabricate our own stuff in the shop. So it was kind of an excuse to get out of the regular boring electives and really put our creative juices to the test. That was way back in middle school. And then in high school, when you get a little more freedom with your classes and selection, the counselors really pushed me to take, you know, the higher level math and science courses, the AP physics, stuff like that. And at that point, I really started learning that there was math and science that goes behind everything around us. And that really fascinated me, to learn that there was, you know, there are math equations that can describe everyday life. And then I guess when it came time to apply to college, I kind of had it in my mind that I wanted to go into engineering school, because I wanted to expand on that experience of building things, creating things, and having the freedom to design and create stuff.
Definitely having the freedom to design and create stuff. Right. It's about the creativity, and that is also needed for entrepreneurship. And of course, so you are seeing the signs of it, looking for that freedom and coming up with your own ideas and solutions. So I can see that what fascinated you about engineering, it was just not the math and science, it was the liberty of getting in touch with your creative side and
Exactly. Creating
something out of nothing.
Right. The math and science classes teach you, you know, good practices and how to design good things. But what I liked is that you can apply what you're being taught to create, you know, anything you can imagine. So that's what I really liked about it. And it wasn't until after college that I really got real life experience putting these engineering lessons to the test with my first job. And that was very rewarding to see, you know, to see all this stuff I'd learned from the textbook, from the professor struggling through the exams. And now, hey, I'm being paid to come up with crazy ideas and commercially produce them, and somebody's going to pay me to do it. So after all the struggles in college, it really started paying off afterwards. And I could add that my first job out of school was down in South Carolina, designing military trucks. We used CAD software to design military trucks. And as a young 21 or 22 at the time, I was suddenly thrust into this professional corporate world where they were trusting me behind the computer screen to come up with designs that were going to be supporting our military overseas. So suddenly I had a huge responsibility to put what I learned in school to the test and to prove myself as a young engineer. And it worked out pretty well. So thank goodness they taught me well and I didn't sleep through all my classes at NC State.
So how did you decide from Enloe High School to go to NC State? What was it that made you stay in town? And how did you decide on, so first of all, there is this whole question about what school you want to go to. And then how did you decide which branch of engineering you wanted to go in?
Well, it wasn't an easy decision. And I have to say, I applied to probably almost a dozen schools while I was in high school. I applied to many, many universities, many private universities. And when it came down to it, when it came down to selecting where I'd like to go, I realized that right in my own backyard was one of the best public engineering universities in the nation. And, you know, why pay double to go somewhere totally foreign if I can get just as good of an education in my backyard, have my family there as support, have some familiar spaces. So everything, all signs pointed to going to NC State in right here in Raleigh. And as far as choosing mechanical engineering over other branches of engineering, I would say mechanical engineering to me, it's just the most practical form of engineering. I'm a nuts and bolts kind of guy. I like to work with my hands and understand designs by touching them and feeling them instead of, say, electrical engineering, where everything is based on electrons and invisible kind of mysterious forces. The mechanical engineers call electricity smoke and magic. So if we can't see it, it's hard to understand. So I work best if I can see something and really get my hands on it. Tangible engineering was the only choice for me.
No, that makes good sense. And listeners, especially our young millennial generation, that's what we have seen in my workshops also. I do workshops from executives to the young adults. We have seen that aptitude is so important, that as you are traveling through your journey in high school, getting ready to go in college, look at what interests do you have, what aptitudes do you have, and if necessary, even go and shadow someone. So for example, we have our young professional and entrepreneur, Kemp, over here. And Kemp, do you think if somebody, a young adult or a student from high school or college would like to reach out to you and ask questions, would you be open for that?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the best things you can do when you're trying to feel out what you want to do in college is to do just that. Do some job shadows, maybe some summer internships, and you're probably not going to get paid for it, but the hands-on experience is worth more than what you could ever be paid to get a good idea of what kinds of things you would be doing in any field that you are interested in.
So how can students go about finding internships from college? I know some of the colleges do have the co-op programs, and let's say if they do not have the co-op programs, do you have any other ideas that our college students can find those internships or find mentors?
Well, that's kind of a tricky one, because some universities, I think, are really good at connecting their students with co-op programs, and others are not as good. So it's then left up to the individual student to reach out to community organizations and to find internships on their own. My brother actually went to school up in Boston, Massachusetts, at Northeastern University, and they have an excellent co-op program that pretty much requires the students to participate in a co-op program before they graduate. So in 5 years, you get a bachelor's degree in engineering, and you also get, you know, a year and a half or so of professional work experience. If you don't have that opportunity, there's still plenty of ways to get involved. Of course, job boards and local listings for companies who are seeking interns. One of the best resources I have found recently is through an excellent program in Raleigh with HQ Raleigh, which is it's a startup incubator, and they have a program focused on small business for college kids who seek, they're interested in small business. They may not have an idea exactly nailed down. It may not be commercialized yet, may not be making any money. They have the interest in the small business. They have an idea. And this program facilitates those students' ideas and shows them the ropes, how to build a business from scratch, how to get your marketing out there, how to do your research, grassroots connections, and they even put you in touch with professionals who are, you know, whose job it is to incubate small businesses and to teach them how to be successful. There are several programs like that in the area, and several of them even host students, international students, to come and learn about small business and to get together in groups to bounce their ideas off each other. We'll have to follow up with some links on this so people can find these programs better. But HQ Raleigh, downtown Raleigh, is an excellent resource for anybody who's interested in small business, starting their business, working with other like-minded entrepreneurial young people. And the international program I'm talking about is called the Global Leadership Program. And they, a couple times a year, they host students from all over the world to come together and to grow their ideas on paper into real-life working businesses. And at the end of the program, some of them are, you know, ready to launch a business and be successful in an extremely competitive startup world.
So when you talk about the Global Leadership Program, are they based out of Raleigh, or because as the name says, global, are they?
They're global. They're global. They have satellite programs all over the world, as far as I understand. I don't know everything about them. I just have been exposed to them briefly, and I know that they have a great program in Raleigh, and they partner with the HQ Raleigh group. And let's see if I could find a way. I know you apply to their program, and you submit your young business idea, and if you're accepted, you're invited to join them in whatever city you're applying to spend a month with counselors and facilitators and other young people of similar age and enthusiasm to to grow your idea into a business. Let's see, if you, I believe the website is globalleadershipprogram.net.
Oh, okay, wonderful. And that's a very valuable resource. And I am very thankful to you that you are sharing that resource with our listeners, because even though on internet it's available, however, having that website directly makes it very easy for folks to go and just pull it out.
Actually, I think the website is globalleaders.info. We'll have to double check on all this, because I'm just looking at my computer now, but globalleaders.info, and the front page has the big HQ Raleigh graphics, so this must be it, in partnership with ThinkHouse Raleigh and HQ Raleigh. So that looks like a good place to get some good information. Again, that's globalleaders.info. They're having a program this July. It's about to kick off, and they would be an excellent group to maybe have on your radio program in the future, and they can really talk about what they do and how great it is to get. It's really exciting to see all these kids. I say kids, but they're young adults, come from all over the world and have a little month-long intensive workshop to build their ideas and learn all sorts of very valuable things.
Well, that's an excellent resource. So as you travel through your journey in college, and you also mentioned that, you know, how you were involved in designing CAD programming for our military, how was that experience like? What did you learn from it?
Well, it was, I was working as a contractor right out of school. My first job down in South Carolina, I was a contractor, which means I was not a direct employee with the company. It means I was not receiving a salary. I was being paid hourly basis, and I wasn't held to the same exact same requirements as the direct employees. So it was really good because I got a unique view on how the business operated. You know, the management structure. Me as a contractor, I was working with these special groups, kind of avoided a lot of the corporate management and bureaucracy, maybe, if you will. I had a little bit more freedom with my time and my hours and stuff like that. But of course, I wasn't being paid a salary, so if I didn't work every day, I wasn't being paid for that time. So it was very rewarding because I could set my own schedule to an extent, and I could work overtime to an extent. But at the same time, I wasn't, I may not have been receiving all of the benefits that some people hold very valuable to direct employees, salary type employees. But I learned a lot because of that. You know, if you're a contractor and you're not expected to go to all of the meetings, maybe, well, that means you're stuck in your office doing all the work when everybody else is on paid time off or going to the corporate luncheons. So I feel like I got I was kind of fast-tracked at this place right into the engineering group that was responsible for designing things that were going to go straight into production be welded directly to these military trucks. It was in Charleston, South Carolina, so the main port, the main shipping port, was 5 miles down the road. So suddenly, coming out of college, I was thrust into this position that I had to learn very, very quickly. You know, I had to learn the ropes very, very quickly, because ultimately lives were depending on what I was designing and what I was doing. So the learning curve was very steep, and it was a very exciting time for me. I was definitely the youngest person in the engineering group. And they took no prisoners. My parents like to say it was a baptism by fire, because I was just dumped in there and expected to be doing the same types of things as these long-time career mechanical design engineers. So it was exciting, to say the least.
Wow, that is exciting. And as you traveled through your career, when did the idea of becoming an entrepreneur take the germ in your mind?
Well, you know, I feel like, and I've discussed this with other people, but for me, the engineering background and the entrepreneurial mindset are, there can't be one without the other for me, because the stuff I'm doing now with Sluice Hammocks, my current project that I'm focusing on, you know, I'm designing and creating a physical product. So without the engineering background, I wouldn't be able to, you know, operate machines and come up with working designs that are safe for people, safe for people to use. So really, what I'm trying to say is, without the engineering, the entrepreneurship won't really work very well for me. A lot of people talk about the entrepreneurship a lot, and on paper, it's great. But from a very young age, I realized that I needed the technical know-how and the engineering education in order to start a business that creates and sells a physical product. So way back, you know, way back, even before the engineering came, I would say there was the entrepreneurial spirit. I was mowing lawns with my brothers, and we had a little company. I forget what we named the company after ourselves, I'm sure. But the pride in small business and the pride in ownership has been with me for a long time. And then I guess as soon as I realized that I could go to engineering school and really learn how to build things, then suddenly I could put the entrepreneurial ideas, make them a reality. So with the engineering background, you can really, you can build something that, if you have the entrepreneurial spirit, you can bring it to life. So that.
Oh, absolutely. However, how did the idea of hammocks come up in your head? And like, how did you decide to go after that?
Well,
is there a story behind it?
There are many stories behind it. I'll try to give you the quick one. I can talk all day
because
about where it came from. But so I work as a mechanical design contractor through Fourth Wind Incorporated, which you mentioned earlier, which is a small business that I started in 2012, and I was between contracts. So I work small design contracts with a handful of different companies, but if you're a contractor, like I said before, you're not, you know, you don't have a guaranteed steady stream of work. You're not working all the time, 40 hours a week. You may not, you're not working on a salary. So there's ups and downs. So in between, you know, your contracts have a lifespan. So in between two contracts, I didn't have any work. So I was sitting at home, and really what, how the story goes is I was sitting, we had some hammocks out in the park. It was a beautiful day. Someone had just bought a brand new hammock at REI, I think. And, you know, they were kind of complaining that it was so expensive and it better be good. I really hope this is a great hammock. I just spent a lot of money on it. And then somebody, I think maybe I discovered the tag on the hammock, said either made in Malaysia or made in Indonesia. And no offense to overseas manufacturing, but we kind of had the sense all of a sudden that, hey, we just spent all this money on this cool product. Why isn't it made in the USA? So from that, the whole made in USA and patriotic feelings welled up. And we said, you know, these things are so cool and everyone loves them so much that they should really be made in the USA because they'd be that much cooler. So from that, I started investigating what it would take to build my own hammock or similar textile product. And I had absolutely no experience in any kind of fabric handling or sewing machine operating or anything like that. But I was out of work for a couple of months, so I didn't really have anything more interesting to do at the time, I felt. So I started ordering some materials. I bought a really cheap sewing machine from Walmart, I think. And I just started playing around with it to see what it would take to reproduce this made in China product and see if we could, what it would take to make them domestically. And a couple rolls of fabric later and a couple sewing machine upgrades, and suddenly I'd spent a couple thousand dollars on it. And I said, you know, I think we can do this. I'm excited about it, and I've invested some good money in it, and I think it's time that we've got to make it work. So then I really upgraded in the sewing machine department, bought some industrial machines, found some good wholesale connections for fabrics, started contacting textile factories in the U.S., trying to see if I could source all my fabrics and components domestically to keep the made in the USA message true. And it just kind of spiraled into this big project that I was really excited about, so I decided to go for it.
What a wonderful story.
At some point along the line, I realized that if I was going to do anything about this, I had to start looking at not only how to build these things, but how to market them and how to get the word out. And that has been the biggest struggle for me. I'm slowly learning more and more about it, slowly wrapping my head around what it takes to promote a product, to commercialize it, and to spread the word. But I will say that the first and probably most important step to getting the word out is to get a good website. And everybody says it, but everything's on the internet these days, right? So if you don't have a website, no one's going to learn about you. And a good website is key for any small business. It brings you all sorts of credibility. It brings you a good place that you can direct people to. And it's very important. I was lucky enough to have a good friend of mine build our website. He did a fantastic job. His name is Ben Dixon. He's in Raleigh, North Carolina, and he is a web developer for a bank locally. So in his spare time, he's able to work with me and kind of be one of my core partners in building the brand. But again, the website is crucial. So as soon as you have a good website, you can focus on everything else.
No, I agree with you that the website is definitely crucial to any business because that's the virtual residence.
Absolutely.
People are not able to see you, and they need to know whether you're authentic or not and what's the story behind. And that's why it's also important
right.
to share the story
right.
on your website. So now this other friend that you have, you mentioned, who is helping you out in his spare time. Now, does he do that as a side business as well? Or was it just
I'm
helping
sure
you out?
I'm sure he would like to if he had more time. I'm encouraging him to, you know, become a freelancer. Right now, I believe he's swamped with his quote-unquote real job. The demands of corporate web development are pretty high. But he's done such a great job on my website that I'm sure there are other people out there who could use his services, and he could surely build a little business around, you know, the portfolio he's created on my project, and he's been involved with other small projects building their websites. So, yes, by all means. He is surely capable of, you know, a side business.
So now we're talking about, absolutely, now we're talking about the young millennials.
Yes.
So as you transitioned back and forth between being an entrepreneur and being a scientific professional as an engineer, how do you balance? Because different mindsets are needed when you're working in corporate. You know, you're all of a sudden you're reporting into a structure, and especially if you're a contractor, then there is not much in control. And here you are when you're the owner of your business, then, you know, you are responsible for every single thing. You have to keep everything in line, keep yourself in line while you're keeping your business in line.
Right, right.
So how do you balance that
out? First and foremost, I just try to stay cool and calm about it because sometimes it can be very hectic and you can kind of lose track of what's going on. You know, you're working on six different projects at the same time, and you've got to have a calendar, first of all. You got to remember what day it is. And you, in the corporate world, you absolutely must remember who you're reporting to, right? You're, like you said, when you're working on your own company, you are your own boss, so you can make all the decisions, and you have the freedom to stick to whatever timeline you want to. There's nobody pushing you to stick to the dates. You've only got yourself out there making sure you hit your own deadlines. You know, you are your own motivation. And then as soon as you get into your corporate job, it's almost the complete opposite. And no matter how fast you want things to go, sometimes the corporate world doesn't react as quickly as the small business world. So you definitely have to switch gears a lot to stay on top of things. And I've found actually with running my own business that it's done great things for me in the corporate world, because if you bring, and when I say corporate world, I mean, you know, the larger organization with multiple levels of management, multiple tiers of bosses, one guy's reporting to the next guy, is reporting to the next guy who's making the decision. But when you bring your small business mentality into that corporate world, people take notice. If you're used to being your own boss and working with just a small group of people, being hyper-reactive to situations, being able to respond to things very quickly, when you bring that attitude into the large corporate setting, people notice. And for the most part, they love it, because you stand out as somebody who gets things done, who responds quickly, who takes pride in the quality of the task at hand, you know, and is responsible, because you're used to making all these decisions for yourself and for your own company. If you screw up a decision, well, you're screwing yourself up. So if you take things as seriously in the corporate world as you do in your own small business world, I think you will do very well. And hopefully you have managers that recognize that, of course.
Of course, there are loads of
situations where your managers don't always see that and don't recognize what's going on. And in those cases, it can be very difficult. And I would just, you know, advise anybody who's in a situation in a big corporate structure who may feel like they're not getting the response or recognition out of their management structure, you know, just hang in there until you find somebody who you can work well with and who understands and appreciates your can-do attitude. Because there are plenty corporate managers out there who do understand that and who do appreciate it. So,
great advice, Kemp. Definitely. And along from what Kemp has said, one of the key things that comes out of being a business owner, being an entrepreneur, is thinking outside the box and also connecting with the paradox of life. As life is in constant flux, you know, things are changing in life. It's not the same all the time. Similarly, business changes. And when you have that mindset of adaptability, of being flexible, it takes you places. It takes you to the next level, not only at work, not only in personal life, not only in relationships, it's all around. And one of the things is that, especially when you're planning to do your business, do something that excites you, that you are passionate about. And as you're doing business, keep in mind that as a young entrepreneur, as a startup entrepreneur, solopreneur, there will be risks, and it's okay. It's okay to take risks. Have that courage to make mistakes, because unless you make mistakes, you're not going to be able to know what's going to work and what's not going to work. It's about being open to taking the risks, making a mistake, because how are you going to have a full life if you're not going to allow yourself to get challenged? And challenge isn't possible unless we keep an open mind about failing. So it is about that personal growth. The personal growth is going to allow you to expand your ability to step into the unknown. And it's a trainable skill. So it's not something that, you know, Kemp was born with it or other young millennial entrepreneurs are born with it. You can learn it and you can develop it. So
absolutely.
I would like to
share.
Yes. No. And you have come up with some great advice. I would just like to share with our audience some of the upcoming episodes. So on June 17th at noon tomorrow at Life Coach Radio Network, the episode that will be airing is The Journey of Cancer, How to Thrive When Faced with a Cancer Diagnosis, Part 3. So, dear friends, if you have a chance, join in, find out what it's all about. It's with our capable hosts, Jen Jeff, Gina Costa, and Kathy Aquino. And another one that's going to be airing is on June 20th at 7:30 a.m., where Misha Avery talks about the importance of being emotionally and mentally fit. So please do join us. And going back to our guests, we have talked about how he balances the delicate fine line between the corporate world and the entrepreneurship, how he brings the entrepreneurship quality into the corporate world. Now, Kemp, there are a lot of great things in corporate world.
Oh, yeah.
What are some of the corporate characteristics that you have brought to your business and that has helped you flourish?
Well, I would say, first of all, with all this talk about small business, entrepreneurship, doing it yourself, I cannot overemphasize the importance of, at some point, participating in the corporate world. Like we talked about previously, my first couple of jobs out of school was in the corporate world. So I don't want to give listeners the idea that you can just, you know, skip all of that and start doing your own thing. Surely it's possible for some people, and I admire anybody who's able to do that. But I think it would be responsible and very valuable to experience firsthand the corporate structure, because someone's got to show you how a business runs, right? I'm still learning. I by no means know everything about how to operate a business. So if you are able to work in a corporate setting and see org charts, you know, organizational charts, and understand chains of command, who's got the power, who's doing all the work, you know, the importance of meetings and safety guidelines, stuff like that, stuff that may seem, you know, not very interesting at first. Well, all that stuff is there for a good reason. You know, some of the biggest and most successful companies have very strict corporate guidelines. You know, OSHA safety rules, mandatory trainings, mandatory time off, budgeting, timelines, cost estimating, you know, all these kind of corporate buzzwords. Well, they're all very important, and maybe you don't want to be in the corporate world your whole career, but I surely benefited from being exposed to that kind of stuff, because now, as I'm trying to run multiple ventures on my own, you know, I can relate to those businesses much better than I ever could have if I didn't have firsthand experience in them. And I understand their operations. I understand what is going into a quote or an estimate when I approach a supplier about a certain, you know, about manufacturing me a certain component that I'm going to use in my product. So understanding the corporate structure is very important, and understanding also add understanding. You know, there's a lot of personal relationships that go on in the corporate world. You know, there's a lot of great team building and outside of work social events that happen that you're only going to find in the corporate world with businesses that have, you know, that have the budget to have a party for their employees. You know, me as a small business, I can't always afford to have an event to host a bunch of vendors or customers at. So there are definitely benefits of the corporate world that you can work into your own business plan, and you know, try to balance, like we said before, balance both worlds and try to get the best of both structures, both systems.
Mm-hmm. And one of the key things that corporate world brings is that self-discipline, learning how to work in the team. It's almost playing team sports. And when you're playing team sports, you do realize that somebody else is going to be a star, somebody
Absolutely.
Else is going to... So, for example, even if we just take basketball, point guard, or the central position, the people who are going to play in different positions, it's how the team comes together. It's not that you need to know every single thing. You could be
Absolutely.
Good in one area, and then somebody
Absolutely.
Else could be good in another area. As you have also seen, Kemp, and you know, with my experience in corporate and the research labs over 25 years, that's what I learned. It's about coming together and achieving the goal. And similarly, when you're in business, whether you're outsourcing or whether you're connecting with your web developer, these are people who are part of your team. And that recognition, whether it comes from the team sports or from being in corporate, extends to business as well. Because people are people. And unless we pay attention to the relationships, it's not going to go anywhere. So, for example, I will share that Kemp and I used to work together in corporate world. And
That's
as
right.
Kemp said that, you know, what you bring to the work will be recognized by people. And I really enjoyed seeing how a young millennial was so responsible, stood out, had great work ethic, so intelligent. And then as I was transitioning into my business fully from the corporate world, I approached Kemp and said, I have a radio show and I would like to be really interested in having you as a guest on my show. So it was that relationship that built.
That's right.
Where Kim didn't have to go out and look for someone that, oh, okay, you know, I need to go share my message that I want to help other young adults, young students. He didn't have to go find it. It's about maintaining those relationships. So similarly, dear friends, listeners, keep that in mind. It's about sowing the seed, and you never know when that seed that you water and you plant, when will that grow into a plant that could give you shade or could give you fruits? So always look at each and every one as somebody who brings value to you. And when you see them in that light, you will also look forward to, okay, how can I build that relationship? How can I provide value to this person, whether it doesn't matter whose path you're crossing, whoever it is, share some value, give them something out of your life. And
that's
what
a great
Kemp's
point.
Business. Yeah, and that's what Kemp's business represents also. As he said, he wanted to manufacture something in U.S. And how he built it. So he had a friend. So he has shared several stories where he can bank on those relationships any day, any time. And not only will he help other people out, other people will help him out. So it's about building a community, helping each other. So Kemp, we have had a great, great session today. And what what I would like to ask you is, how can our audience reach you if they have any questions or if they want to purchase your hammocks?
Absolutely. Well, I'm all over the internet. My website is called sluicehammocks.com. Sluice is spelled just like juice, S-L-U-I-C-E, hammocks.com. And I should add that that name is derived from the sluice box, which is a device that's used in gold mining to separate the gold from the dirt. So we're trying to build a brand that's all about creating value from, you know, what raw material, from what you're given by Mother Nature. Catch the good stuff. The sluice box does exactly that. But in any case, sluicehammocks.com. I'm also on Facebook, Sluice Hammocks. We're on Etsy. We're on Instagram, Twitter, all these social media outlets, trying to spread the word with as many people as we can. You can email me directly at Kemp, K-E-M-P, Kemp@sluicegear.com. Surely you could get in touch with Divya to find me. You could message me through any kind of Facebook, stuff like that. Also, we have a special promo code just for listeners today. If you're interested in purchasing a hammock or any of our other fun, colorful products from the website, we have a 20% discount coupon code just for everybody listening. The code is RADIO20. So if you go to the website and you punch in RADIO20 at checkout in the shopping cart, you can save some money and order some hammocks for the whole family. Check out what we're all about, what we're trying to do. That'd be great.
So Kemp, since you have so kindly created the promo code, there are a lot of our listeners who will be downloading this. So do you think you are planning to keep the promo code open for them as well?
Well, I'd like to. We'll see. I'm planning to make it just a limited time thing, but we'll see how it goes. It's active now, and there's no deactivation date set. So surely in the future, if you hear about it, it should still be working. If not, just email me. Tell me you heard me on the radio, and we will surely be able to offer you some sort of special discount for tuning in today.
Thank you. Greatly appreciate it. It was such a pleasure having you on the show. And also thank you for sharing all your links. And audience, if you can go and click a like button to Kemp for his hammocks, that will be great. As
yes,
a community, let's promote his hammocks. It's made in U.S. for U.S. folks. And that is wonderful. Thank you, Kemp, again, for being on our show. And listeners, you can contact me, your host, Divya Parikh, at contact@divyaparikh.com. And my website address is DivyaParikh.com. I'll spell it out for your convenience and ease. D-I-V as in Victor, Y-A, P as in Paul, Apple, Robert, Edward, Kevin, Harry.com. Thank you again, Kemp, for joining us.
Thank you, and thanks for everyone who tuned in. It was great to be on and talk to you.
Wonderful. Thank you again, and until our next show, be powerful and stay cool. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.